Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 131. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Hello, nemesis.
Howdy, Pete. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. So we've got some game impressions to talk about, some news to discuss, and then we have this week's big topic, which is sort of our own version of March Madness. It is the Tournament of Villains Showdown.
I really feel like we should have rhymed it with a V somehow, but...
Oh well, such is life. Before we get to that, though, we will kick things off by discussing some brand new games. Strangely enough, some brand new games for the Nintendo 3DS, starting with Detective Pikachu, which just came out a couple of days ago.
Wow, now is Ryan Reynolds in this one?
No, he is not. I forget who is playing Pikachu in this one, but it is not Ryan Reynolds. I think it might be, like, even his regular voice actor. I'm not sure. But to be honest, I really knew pretty much nothing about this game going in other than that Ryan Reynolds was not in it. I knew that it involved a tough-talking Pikachu that's also a detective, but I like literally knew nothing else. The trailer I'd seen pretty much showed me nothing of the gameplay, so I went in totally blind to this game.
And what did you think?
Well, what I discovered is that it is basically an old-school adventure game, like, you know, Monkey Island or the Sierra Adventure games, where you wander around, you talk to people, you find and use a few items, solve a couple of puzzles, but of course, you're a detective, so a lot of it involves, you know, getting testimony, there's a lot of dialogue, you know, it's an investigation game, so it's kind of a little bit like the Ace Attorney games, only without the courtroom battles, but instead it has a few QuickTime events and lots of cutscenes featuring an adorable talking Pikachu.
That actually strangely sounds like it would be up your alley, was it?
somewhat. I mean, it's certainly not as good as Ace Attorney or some other games in that vein, but I am enjoying it. I do like, you know, walking around and interacting with all the characters and seeing the world, and it does look pretty darn good for a Pokemon game. And it's fun to, you know, talk to the other characters. You can speak to both humans and Pokemon. And, you know, you get testimonies, you learn clues, and, you know, you proceed through the game that way and try to solve mysteries.
But strangely, it can't be helped.
Yeah, that is a phrase that has been popping up in the game quite a bit.
It's a pretty cool meme already, I think.
There's no 3D. It's all 2D. But the voice acting is pretty solid, which, you know, is pretty important for a game like this, where that is one of the game's selling points. On the other hand, it is fairly slow-paced. Some of the characters are a little bit dull, but it really does have a lot of charm, and the mysteries are pretty interesting. To enjoy this game, you know, I think you really have to enjoy mystery types of games and visual novel types of games. And if you do, and if you like Pokemon, then you'll probably like this. But, you know, if I was giving it a rating on a Nintendo Power scale from what I've played so far, you know, probably a 7.0 or something like that.
My interest was kind of piqued when you told me what style of game it was.
Was it Pikachu'd?
Yeah, I suppose it was. No, I didn't realize it was sort of like a point-and-click adventure.
Yeah, pretty much is.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested now. But then you gave it a 7, and now I'm not. So, nicely done.
7's good, though. I mean, it's not great, but it is good. But, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an acquired taste. It's certainly not perfect, but I am having fun with it.
Not about to dust off the 3DS just yet.
I see. But, you know, in addition to the game, there is also a brand new enormous amiibo.
Do tell.
Yes, as you are probably aware, there is, you know, this supersized amiibo. It is pretty large, like, you know, 3 times larger than a regular amiibo. Comes with, you know, a pretty nifty map for its base. And, of course, you know, it's adorable and it's wearing a detective hat. But it's also kind of on the plain side. You know, not a whole lot of detail going on there. In the game artwork, sometimes they have Pikachu, you know, in a detective coat, or they have him, you know, he drinks coffee a lot in the game. And sometimes there's a magnifying... Yeah, he's a coffee-drinking Pikachu. But, so it would have been cool if they had incorporated some of that stuff into the amiibo, if he was holding a magnifying glass, or the cup of coffee, or had the jacket on. But instead, it's just, you know, kind of Pikachu, you know, without a whole lot of details, and just the hat, and, you know, sort of has his arm raised in a somewhat questionable pose.
I saw you made him and Kirby high five or something.
I made him high five with King DDD, and I also posed him with my Mega Yarn Yoshi.
Now, why is he so large? Is he compensating for something, or?
I don't know. Possibly compensating for the fact that he does almost nothing in the game. I mean, the amiibo does. There is pretty much, you know, no use during regular gameplay. It turns out that, you know, if you go back to the title screen, you can unlock any, you know, little cutscenes you might have missed from chapters that you've already beaten. But if you're, like, actively playing the game, there is no function for the amiibo. So, yes, perhaps it is compensating for that.
Sounds like a puzzling decision.
I suppose you could say that. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to recommend picking up this amiibo, you know, other than if you're just a big Pokemon fan or a big amiibo fan, because, you know, it's not super useful in-game. And, you know, you can get a lot cooler Pokemon collectibles, I think, for $30 than this Pikachu that, you know, has no articulation or no moving parts or anything like that. You know, it's big for an amiibo, but, you know, as far as a collectible goes, you know, $30, I don't know if it's really quite worth it.
Well, you heard it here first. I think he's going to unlock Detective Pikachu in Smash Brothers when it comes out later this year.
Well, that would be cool.
And he talks.
But I wouldn't bet my beard on it.
Yeah, me neither.
Anyway, I'm personally glad I added Pikachu to my collection, but it's kind of hard to recommend to you know, your average person just because it is, you know, so overpriced.
Now, is it heavier because it's bigger, or does it feel hollow?
It's definitely heavier. I mean, I'm sure there is some hollowness to it, but yeah, it's definitely heavier than your average amiibo.
Mm-hmm. All right, fascinating.
Anyway, I wouldn't say that either the Detective Pikachu game or amiibo are amazing, but they're both pretty decent, and the more you like Pokemon or detectives, the more likely you are to enjoy them. All right, moving on from there, I have actually been playing another 3DS game at the same time. Yes, I have not been playing Switch this week. I've been playing two 3DS games. In addition to Detective Pikachu, I've also been playing The Alliance Alive from Atlus.
Oh, how's that going?
It's going pretty well. And, of course, it wasn't that long ago I was talking about playing through the demo on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now I've got the full game. I've been able to sink a lot of time into it. And I am definitely still enjoying it.
That game kind of looks like Atrian Odyssey, is that right?
Well, it certainly doesn't play like Atrian Odyssey. I mean, some of the character designs might resemble it in that, you know, the characters do look fairly childish. But other than that, you know, it's very, very, you know, superficial similarities. This is much more of a traditional Japanese RPG. It's not a dungeon crawler. And as previously discussed, you know, in the demo to the game, you start out playing as a couple of human teenagers named Galil and Azura. And they are young members of this resistance movement set in a world where humans are considered an inferior race and they are ruled over by demons and beast men. However, after you get through the part that's in the demo, and I guess this is a little bit of a spoiler here, but you go through that, you go on this little adventure with those two characters, they team up with a few allies, you know, you learn about the outside world a bit, but then after that, it switches over to a different set of characters. It switches over to this young girl scientist named Tiggy, and one of the demons named Vivian, and you go on a little adventure with them. And then after that, you switch perspectives to another character, a human who's working in the service of the demons and his friend. And, you know, of course, eventually, you know, all the stories of these different characters interconnect, intertwine, and they all come together. But it's a really cool way to do things. Like, you know, after I had finished that little story with Galil and Azura, I was like, oh man, I wish I could continue seeing their story. But then I got caught up in the next character's story and the next character's story. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of neat. Because every time it was like, oh, I just want to see more and more. And of course, eventually it does work out that way. But yeah, they were all fun to play.
Were you ever getting Tiggy with it?
You could say that I was.
I would.
So, you know, eventually all the characters come together. Eventually you get sort of a headquarters of sorts. And you also, you know, in addition to having all these characters come together, you get help from these different guilds you visit. And so, like, in battle, they will sometimes, you know, randomly help you out by raising your defense or making the enemy's defense go down. Maybe they'll stun a bunch of enemies for a turn. Maybe they'll boost your stats. Mm-hmm. So it does give this cool feeling of being supported by all the allies you encounter.
Cool.
You can also use these guilds to develop new weapons and abilities, including updating your battle formations and even unlocking, you know, new abilities for your characters. So it really does kind of give this sense of people coming together for a common cause. And so even though the title is indeed wonky, you know, the Alliance Alive, the Alliance part really does make sense.
All right. The game looks great just looking from the screenshots.
It looks pretty nice. I mean, I wouldn't say it's one of the best looking 3DS games out there, but it looks fairly nice. And as I mentioned previously, it does have a really neat painterly aesthetic. So, you know, some of the towns and backgrounds you are experiencing look really, really nice. From a story perspective, I'm also enjoying the game a lot as well. It's full of intrigue and tragedy and ambushes. And it does have this, you know, rather contemporary feel, you know, talking about oppression and prejudice and rebellion. But it's not at all heavy-handed or preachy or anything like that. You can definitely tell it is from the writer of Suikoden.
Hmm. Which is a compliment.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I love them Suikoden games. Mm-hmm. I also really like the battles. They are fast-paced, very snappy. You know, they're mostly these traditional turn-based fights. But, you know, not only do they move quickly, as in they only last a turn or two against your average enemies, but you can, you know, double or quadruple the speed to really make them go quickly.
Hmm.
Plus, you can set characters in different positions in your combat formation, so you can enhance various stats, like, you know, if they're an attacker or a support character or a defender. And on top of that, you can choose which weapons your characters specialize in, so you really have a lot of customization choices when it comes to combat.
Hmm. Now, I can't remember if I heard this or not, but are there random encounters, or can you avoid?
No, there are not random encounters. As you walk around dungeons and the overworld, you can see, you know, these little black, gray enemies walking around. And, you know, you can sometimes sneak past them. Sometimes they're going to get you no matter what, and it's kind of an unavoidable fight. But at least you can see it there. And you can gain abilities that let you be more evasive if you, you know, don't like fighting so much. But no, the battles are not random.
Hmm.
Another cool thing about the overworld, though, is that you can get a few vehicles in the game. Like early on, you get this glider that lets you sort of fly from mountaintop to mountaintop. And then after that, you get a robotic duck suit. Yes, robotic duck suit that lets you go into hot lava. And after that, there are other vehicles as well, but I don't want to talk about those because of, you know, too much spoiler territory.
I feel like that's a spoiler on your Halloween costume this year.
Should we be so lucky? On the other hand, you know, I don't love everything about the game. There are some things I feel could have been improved upon. Like, even though the battles are very fast, I feel like character growth is very, very slow.
Hmm.
And I think I mentioned this last time, but you earn these talent points to unlock new abilities. And, you know, you earn talent points as you, you know, fight battles in the game. And you start with a few thousand to allocate from the start. And those give you, like, your basic abilities, you know. But then after that, it's like, well, now I need 5,000 points for the next ability I want. And I only am earning, like, 6 points per battle. So as you can see, that, you know, can take a horribly long time if I want to get, you know, the boost that improves, you know, how much my HP increases.
Yeah, that's almost like collecting box tops back in the day or something.
Yeah, luckily, you can still unlock new moves in battle frequently, and you still get stat boosts separately. It doesn't depend on, you know, unlocking them, you know, through the talent method. But still, it is kind of slow, and I did kind of miss, you know, a traditional experience system once in a while, because it's like, you know, it's hard to tell if I'm really getting strong enough to move on to the next area. Like, have I really improved enough? Also, the interface for shops and equipment is kind of hard to read sometimes. There's tons of information, but it can also sort of be, you know, very clunky and ultimately hard to tell, is this weapon or piece of armor actually going to be beneficial or not? Just sometimes it's a little confusing there.
Hmm.
Other than that, though, I am really enjoying the game so far. You know, I haven't beat it yet, but it does seem really, really cool. It's got an excellent story, strong characters, fast-paced gameplay, fantastic soundtrack, and some unique gameplay elements that make it feel like a really great mix of new elements and, you know, classic turn-based JRPG gameplay.
Hmm. But did you encounter the penguin yet?
I don't think I'm ready to talk about the Penguin yet.
Fair.
But yeah, overall, I feel like this is a game that will, you know, probably be overlooked by a lot of people since it is coming out on 3DS in the Switch era. And, you know, years from now, this might be one we look back on as like a hidden gem that, you know, is selling for a small fortune if you want the physical copy. So we'll see. As an RPG fan, I definitely like it and I definitely recommend it.
Very cool.
Well, moving on from here, let's discuss a little bit of news. Specifically, the folks over at Spike Chunsoft have announced a couple of new titles for Switch.
That is hands down my favorite company name.
Spike Chunsoft?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a combination of Spike and Chunsoft, you know, kind of like Square Enix. It was two separate companies.
Yeah, that came together. That was my assumption. Now, the former spot filled by that was Mahesco.
That is not how you pronounce the late lamented Majesco, probably.
Well, it should have been.
Anyway, one of the new games that they have announced, it's coming out pretty soon on May 25th. Pixel Junk Monsters 2 is on its way to Switch.
Nice.
Now, obviously, this is a sequel to the original Pixel Junk Monsters. It is a tiki-themed tower defense game. You defend the tiki hut from the monster hordes. It has character customization. It's got four-player online co-op. It's got two-player local co-op. And it's looking pretty cool. Now, Pete, I have to admit, I have played the original Pixel Junk Monsters, but not a whole lot, and it's been quite a while. Did you ever play it? And if so, what did you think?
I did play it, Chris, and
cool.
I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I've heard lots of good things.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a fairly standard tower defense game by today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, at the time, it was pretty cool. And I remember, I think, if I'm thinking of this correctly, it came out for both PS3 and PS Vita, so you could play it on the TV or on the handheld.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, you basically, you know, waves of enemies come out, and you get a chance to, like, build things in between the rounds.
Yes.
And you run around as this little tiki fellow.
Right.
Now, there's really simple core mechanics. Like, you could, you know, collect your money, and you had to figure out which tree had more money than the other trees while you're trying to figure out, you know, your strategy.
Huh. But, I don't remember that.
Yeah, there was just a lot of little nuances that made the game even more compelling than it would be. So a lot of fun little design choices I thought they made.
Okay.
What's intriguing to me about Monsters 2 is that it looks like they've departed two-dimensional graphics and gone in the 3D route.
Yeah, ironically, there are no pixels in Pixel Junk Monsters 2. Yeah, it is all 3D. And, you know, from what they showed in the video, you know, it'll have, like, you know, a 3D, you know, over-the-shoulder perspective, so you can, like, really get down there and not just view it top-down, but also, like, you know, really sort of play it almost like a third-person action game for parts of it. At least that's how they made it appear.
Yeah, that's what I saw, too, which is pretty interesting. So, you know,
yeah,
you know, there's been, let's say, 3 billion tower defense games between the time this came out and now. So it is kind of curious to see what they will do with it. But mm-hmm. I have faith in this studio. I've liked all their games pretty much. And, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with this one.
So definite purchase for you?
I'm going to say yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to support it.
All right. Very cool. Good to know. Only have to wait about 2 more months.
Sweet.
The other game that is on the way from Spike Chunsoft for Switch that I'm especially looking forward to is called Steins Gate Elite. And that one is supposed to be out later sometime this year. Pete, do you know much about the Steins Gate franchise?
I have no knowledge of the Steins Gate franchise.
Okay, well, let me give you a quick lesson. Steins Gate was originally a straight-up visual novel released over in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still images, tons and tons of text. And, you know, even for a visual novel, this game didn't have a whole lot of branching opportunities, to be honest.
All right.
And eventually it did come out here in North America. And then also in the meantime, it was released as an anime, which I watched and I thought was pretty amazing.
Hmm.
Also, I remember the creator of 999 and Virtue's Last Reward mm-hmm. talking about how much he liked Steins Gate. So as soon as I saw it was available in English, I'm like, well, I've got to check this thing out. This thing must be pretty good if Kotaro Uchikochi is into this.
Mm.
And I was blown away. I loved it. I thought the anime was fantastic. I really liked the game as well. So I am very excited to see that this is coming over to the Switch in North America.
All right, if it's not good, I'm coming over and I'm going to beat you up.
Please look forward to it.
Or at least rip off your mustache.
So I'm just going to ignore that and talk about what makes the Elite version elite. Because this one is not just a straight-up visual novel. Like I said, they turned it into an anime. And so this game, instead of just having, you know, still pictures and walls of text, actually uses the footage from the anime. It uses the actual animated footage, along with some new animation, and so they've really increased, you know, the quality of the presentation compared to the original. It's got, you know, a whole lot more going on to it, visually speaking.
Sure.
As for how that actually translates into a great game, you know, that sort of remains to be seen. Also, they've announced that it only has Japanese audio with English subtitles. And for some people, that's great. You know, I know a lot of people that they will only play their games, you know, with the Japanese audio. They'll only view anime with their Japanese audio. But in the case of Steins Gate, it had a fantastic localization and had really great English dialogue. So for me, I just kind of think it's kind of too bad that it's not going to be able to share that same localization with the North American version of the anime. Regardless, you know, I really love the characters. I really love the story. I mean, it's really hard to sum up, you know, what it is. It's basically this sci-fi time travel story, you know, set in, you know, more or less modern day Tokyo. But the time travel aspect is kind of weird to get into without going into, you know, crazy spoiler territory. But yeah, I just thought it was really, really good. And I am absolutely looking forward to, you know, playing this Elite version on Switch.
Yeah, me too now.
Even without English voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
That was all the news I wanted to talk about this week. So why don't we move over to some listener mail? So last week we talked a whole bunch about Star Fox, and we kind of asked if any of our listeners had opinions on you know, the future of the Star Fox franchise, and we did get a little bit of feedback on that. So this first one came via Twitter from at NintendoPix, and he wrote, "Star Fox for Switch? Imagine Star Fox 64 blended with Mass Effect and Star Wars Battlefront, an action RPG with on-foot, in-vehicle, and space combat segments. But instead of Fox McCloud, you build your own character. Multiplayer combat as well, rich single-player adventure."
Well, Chris, to me, sign me up, man. Mass Effect is one of my favorite series, and it's a beautiful game.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars Battlefront looks really good, too. I've been watching that game a lot. I haven't played it, but just from the videos I've seen, it looks great. So, yeah, sign me up. If I can get a Star Fox that looks and plays and, you know, is as polished as some of those titles, yeah, I'm all about it. As for the build your own character, that's interesting. I've never really considered Star Fox being in that realm, but I actually don't hate it. I think Star Fox is one of those series where, you know, there's always been, you're always playing as Star Fox, and Star Fox is one of the few Nintendo characters that actually talks. So it would be kind of interesting to be a character that does not talk and just sort of, you know, you're like maybe Star Fox's new wingman. So who knows? Maybe there could be something to that.
For the most part, I think that his description, you know, synced up pretty close to what I was talking about last week about, you know, the triple A Star Fox I would really like to see.
Yeah.
You know, he did mention multiplayer, and that was something I kind of forgot about last week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would think it would be really cool to have a online multiplayer component. I mean, there are four members of Fox's team, so to be able to, you know, assemble your own team of four players and go out there and engage in missions, I think would be really, really cool. You know, personally, I'm not really into the, you know, create your own character aspect of it, but I still think these are some pretty darn cool ideas. The next letter comes from TJ McCart, and he writes, "I actually really like Star Fox Assault. They tried new ideas while keeping the mission-based structure, which blended fairly well. The story was pretty serviceable as well. At this point, I wish Nintendo would contract Insomniac to make the next Star Fox. It would feel a lot like Ratchet and Clank, but is that a bad thing?"
Yeah, I think I mentioned that last week. You know, the Ratchet and Clank remake they've done.
Oh, that's right.
Looks amazing. It really has some really, really nice visuals. And it really kind of suits Star Fox for some reason. That was kind of the game I thought of when I saw it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all on board.
Yeah, personally, if there's any possible way to get Insomniac developing on a Nintendo system or on a Nintendo property, I would absolutely take it. I mean, they're not really known for, you know, space-based shooters or anything, but, you know, I'm pretty convinced that anything they touch will turn to gold, so I wouldn't complain if that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Next letter comes from Joey T, and he writes, I'm not sure if you guys or other Power Pros fans are aware, but if you type do a barrel roll into the Google search bar on the homepage, the page itself will do a barrel roll and turn upside down. Also, Slippy's Pete impersonation was spot on. I hope Pete comes back soon.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I think you should take it as a compliment.
All right, fair.
Yeah, as for that do a barrel roll thing, you know, I'm a Mac guy, and so I usually use Safari. It does not actually work on Safari, but yeah, it's totally true. It does work on most other browsers. It's kind of a neat little Easter egg that's in there. Yep, totally.
Yeah, I remember when they did that. They must have some, you know, big Star Fox fans that work over at Google.
I guess so. Our next listener letter comes from Brian Booth, who writes, in response to your Smash episode, while I'm excited to see what Sakurai has to offer us this time, at first I was a little concerned because it felt like so little time had passed since Smash 4. Then I realized the game itself actually came out in 2014, but the DLC seemed to stretch out forever, so it only seems like a couple years. Looking at some elements of the teaser, it looks like this really could be a brand new game and not a port, although they will probably stick to the Smash 4 engine, since it seems like they found a balance between Melee and Brawl that a lot of fans would like. I'm excited to see whatever new and updated content they have to offer, and I really hope we get another spiffy subtitle instead of just Smash Brothers for Nintendo Switch. Of course, I'll be picking it up no matter what they call it.
What if they call it Smash Brothers Late for Dinner?
That sounds pretty enticing to me. Yeah, Brian makes some good points. I guess we'll have to wait and see as to what it all is. We'll definitely know by E3.
Says you.
The next letter comes from listener Blake, and he says, I just wanted to share, I was a day one Ouya owner, and I love the console. Yes, I know it's pretty much dead, but one of the things I love most about it is all the quirky little games it has. I've discovered a lot of gems on there that will stick with me for a long time, and I'm very grateful to the Ouya for giving indie developers a platform where they can share these often small, often quirky games. I'm also now a Switch owner, and that's one of the things I love about it, too. It has so many nindies that are so quirky, it totally reminds me of my beloved Ouya, and in a weird way, I feel like the Ouya is still alive through the Switch. The Switch is probably my favorite console of all time, and I'm proud of Nintendo and grateful to them for creating something that so many independent developers want to and can bring their quirky little gems to.
Now, I was never an Ouya owner, but I have to think that, you know, that's cool. Having not owned one myself, taking it as somebody else's word that the Switch is kind of carrying the torch of nindies, I guess, is pretty cool.
Definitely is.
Plus the idea that, you know, you can play it on the TV and handheld. For me, that's like every time a game comes out for any console, it's like I want to own it on Switch. So
yeah.
Especially when it's not hindered by graphics or performance or anything like that. It's nice to be able to have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Switch is the go-to de facto system for me in that case.
Yeah, I can certainly make no Ouya comparisons myself, but it's obvious that it is a fantastic outlet for indie developers, and it's, you know, far and away one of the best things about the system, for sure.
On a side note, that's the first time I think I've heard someone say Ouya in a sentence, so bravo.
Ouya!
No, really, I don't think I've ever heard somebody pronounce that console. I don't know why.
Anyway, give your credit to Blake. He wrote it.
Bravo, Blake. Bravo.
Our last letter for this week comes from Dark Shuey, and he writes, in honor of Konami's birthday, I have a query. I just realized PAL Territories actually got silver Konami boxes for Super NES games. Any idea why the U.S. didn't? Also, what are your favorite and most underrated Konami games? So in response to this, yeah, apparently Konami was founded on March 21st, 1969. So yes, it did just celebrate a birthday recently. As for those silver boxes that were released over in Europe, I can't say I know why they did that over there and not here in North America. I mean, I suppose if I had to guess, I would say that Nintendo probably mandated that it was a black frame for U.S. boxes. I mean, I can't really think of too many games that didn't have, you know, that black border all over the place on it. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but that's my best guess, you know, 25 years after the fact that Nintendo just probably said, yes, all the boxes must be this way or something like that. What about the other part of his question? What about underrated and favorite Konami games?
Oh, I don't dare go before you in this category or else I'll just get thwomped. So you go first, all right?
All right. Well, as far as underrated games go, I would go with Suikoden Tear Crease on the Nintendo DS. You know, as I already mentioned earlier, Suikoden is a fantastic RPG series, in my opinion. I think a lot of people didn't even really pay attention to the release on DS, but I think it's an excellent RPG. I would also say that Castlevania Judgment is underrated. I mean, I know it's not, you know, the best game ever or anything. And a lot of people, you know, it's like, why is there a Castlevania fighting game? But, you know, look past that and you discover it's actually not half bad. Axley is one of my all-time favorite shooters. In fact, probably my single all-time favorite shooter. But when I hear most other people talking about classic 16-bit shooters, it's not usually on the list. So I would say that is underrated. And then also Castlevania Dracula X. A lot of people, you know, kind of poo-poo on that one because they're like, oh, it's not nearly as good as the PC Engine version. But, you know, for someone who grew up as a kid in the 16-bit era and didn't have access to the Japanese-only PC Engine version, you know, I thought that Dracula X on the Super NES was pretty darn good. Yeah, it's obviously lacking a lot of things compared to the other game, but you know what? I didn't have that game, and just taking on its own merits, I think it's pretty cool. As for favorite Konami games, man, I hardly even know where to start. You know, Contra, TMNT 4, Tiny Toon Adventures, pretty much every Castlevania game, Batman Returns on the Super NES, and of course, the Metal Gear series.
Metal Gear.
I love a lot of the Metal. Yeah, I love a lot of the Metal Gears that were on PlayStation. But you know, Twin Snakes was pretty good on GameCube, and then we had an excellent port of Snake Eater on 3DS. And of course, that one also always stands out to me because we actually got an issue of Nintendo Power into the 3DS version of that game. So I'm always very proud of that.
It's awesome.
So your Konami picks, Pete?
Well, I feel like you glaringly left Goonies 2 off this list.
Oh, Goonies 2 is a great one.
As well as Boktai, The Sun Is in Your Hand.
Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Even though that's probably not the greatest game ever, but you got to give them merit for trying something new.
Yeah, it was definitely innovative, and it caused me to play a game outside and then get bitten by a spider.
and then, of course, if you're going to talk TMNT, you got to also talk Simpsons arcade game.
Oh, I didn't bring that one up since I was trying to just stick to Nintendo platforms. But yeah, I mean, believe it or not, I actually own the Simpsons arcade game. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of that one as well.
Other than that, I totally agree with your list and I have nothing to add.
All right. That is surprisingly agreeable of you. Thanks to everyone who wrote in. We are always happy to hear your comments on the show or current Nintendo happenings or suggestions for big topics or intermission music or anything. And speaking of which, let's take an intermission right now, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, the Tournament of Villains Showdown. Alright, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the Tournament of Villains Showdown.
Tournament of Villains Showdown!
And this is where 16 of gaming's most prominent villains are compared to one another in various categories to determine who is the ultimate villain on Nintendo platforms. You know, as we're recording this, it is near the end of March. This is sort of our own version of March Madness. No sports teams here, just video game villains competing one-on-one to see who is the best.
Yeah, now this is an ultra-scientific method of comparing villains against each other, so, you know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Please,
absolutely.
Please just, you know, hang on every word and and write us if you hate what our picks are, so.
Now, we have divided this group of villains into four categories. So there are four separate leagues here. So first of all, we have the Major Villains League, and that includes Bowser, Andross from Star Fox, Ganon or Ganondorf, take your pick, from the Legend of Zelda series, and the Mother Brain from Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the RPG League, and in that category competing, we have Kefka from Final Fantasy VI, Lavos from Chrono Trigger, Gigas. How do you even pronounce that? Is that how you pronounce his name? Gigas? Gigass? I don't know.
I'd say
anyway,
Gigas, but okay.
Gigas from the Earthbound series, and Fawful from Mario and Luigi.
And the Mustard of Your Doom.
Yes. Then we have the Third Party League, which includes Dr. Wily representing the Mega Man series, Count Dracula representing Castlevania, Dr. Robotnik representing Sonic the Hedgehog, and, just for you, Pete, Risky Boots representing the Shantae series.
Thanks for that one.
Finally, we have the Royal League, where we have King K. Rool from Donkey Kong Country, King Hippo from Punch-Out, King Dedede from the Kirby series, and last but not least, Wart from Super Mario Brothers 2. I know he doesn't have King in his name, but he's wearing a crown, so it seems like he should be in the Royal League to me.
Yeah, and a robe and a medallion.
Yeah, yeah. So, like you said, this is going to be an ultra-scientific competition here, judged by you and me in various categories. So for the first round, we are going to compare these characters in sets of two by who has the best fashion sense.
Did you consider having King Slender in here at all?
You know, I didn't, but I probably should have thought of that. Why didn't you bring that up to me earlier? Darn it, Pete.
Well, he's not really a villain, per se.
He's not. He's not. So I guess, yeah, I guess it doesn't make any sense, does it? Yeah, no. But I would have had to kick out Wart to get him in there into the Royal League.
I like Wart being in there. Warts and all.
You know. I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get this party started. And our first face-off is Ganon versus Andross. Which of these characters has the best fashion sense? Because, you know, being a villain isn't just about being evil. It's about, you know, lots of other aspects, too. And one of those important things is fashion sense. So that is why that is our judgment criteria for this first round. Mm. Pete, who do you go with? Ganon, Andross?
Well, Andross is kind of just a floating head, right? Like, have we really seen
yes.
him wearing much?
No, not really. He is basically a floating head and floating hands. So
now, that being said, I mean, his eyebrows are pretty on point, right?
He does have, you know, very stylish eyebrows, but I mean, in fairness, so does Ganondorf.
Yeah, that's true. And then Ganon, you know, for the most part, Ganondorf especially, you know, he is pretty nicely dressed, right? He's got like a little ornate suit of armor. He's got a cape. He's got stylized.
Yeah, sometimes he's got his big robe, you know. And he's often got, you know, very excellent facial hair too.
I was going to say, he has very stylized facial hair. A lot more manscaping than I like to do.
Indeed.
So I think, you know, I think the choice is pretty obvious in this one, but I'm going to go ahead and go with Ganondorf.
I agree. My pick is also for Ganondorf. Ganondorf, more stylish than Andross. That is your winner for this first matchup, Ganon, a.k.a. Ganondorf.
Really no contest.
Moving on to our next matchup in the Major Villains League, we have Bowser versus Mother Brain. Pete, what's your thought on this one? Who was the most fashionable?
Well, in the image you're using, Bowser's wearing a white tux. How do you beat that? I don't really know. So I'm going
to Well, it's true. I put together a visual aid for this tournament, but we don't have to stick to that. We should be thinking of all incarnations of Bowser, not just the one from Odyssey. But yes, I mean, that is a very good point. You know, Bowser and a tux, it really doesn't get any more stylish than that. And basically, Mother Brain is a giant brain in a vat, sometimes attached to a big, freakish mutant body. So I think I know where you're going with this. The clear-cut winner, obviously, Brain of Vat. No, it's Bowser.
Now, if it was Brain of Vat versus Andross, I have no idea how you picked that one. But, okay. You're right. I think Bowser on this one.
All right. We have Bowser as the victor. Okay, moving on to the RPG League. We have Kefka versus Lavos. Who is the most stylish?
I gotta say, hands down, Kefka.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't know if it's that clear cut, because on the one hand, Kefka is kind of like dressed like a super goofy clown. But then on the other hand, you have Lavos, who is basically like a humongous space porcupine or something.
Chris, you can't say Kefka's dressed like a clown. I mean, he's obviously dressed fabulous.
Well, yes, he is. So ultimately, I do have to give it to Kefka. But I don't know, there's something about that clown makeup on his face that just always kind of weirded me out. But yeah, you know, naked space porcupine that then turns into like this weird robot thing shooting lasers from its breasts. Yeah, just can't cut it compared to the stylishness of Kefka. So yeah, Kefka, the winner there.
Kefka, queen of the desert.
On to the next matchup in the RPG League, we have Gigas versus Fawful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gigas, I'm not really sure what is going on with this outfit, right?
It's another tough one. You know, he's an alien from outer space, kind of like Lavos. So, you know, fashion isn't really his thing. So this might not really be the fairest, category for him to be judged in. But you know what? Too bad for him, because, you know, whether it's Earthbound, where he's kind of like some weird, you know, just red splotch in space, or whether it's Earthbound Beginnings, where he's sort of some undecipherable alien guy in a sphere, I think it's not quite as fashionable as Fawful. You know, Fawful has those nifty shades, mm-hmm. and he's got that nice robe, so I'm kind of picking Fawful for this one. Do you agree?
Yeah, Fawful looks like he owns an iron, so I would say yes.
All right, very good. Moving on then to the third party league, we have Dr. Wily versus Count Dracula. Who do you say is the victor here, Pete?
Well, Dr. Wily really looks like he let himself go usually. You know, he's kind of got the wispy hair on the side. He's wearing a lab coat, not really trying.
Well, he's a scientist. You can tell, you know, he's more concerned about his work than his appearance, I would say.
That's fine, but like, you know, Bill Nye or Neil deGrasse Tyson, they look, you know, put together. And I just feel like he's not really trying here. So, and Dracula is just known for his sweet duds. So,
yeah,
this one's, again, kind of a clear-cut answer, I think. So, what do you think?
I agree. No brainer. Absolutely. It is Count Dracula. Far more stylish than Dr. Wily. I mean, Dr. Wily, like in Mega Man 8, he had this cool skull motif going on with his clothes. He started dressing nicer. But, you know, for most of his games, it was clearly, you know, not a priority for him. So, yeah, definitely Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
So on to the next entry in the third party league, we have Dr. Robotnik, a.k.a. Dr. Eggman, versus Risky Boots. No. And I'm not really sure who to vote for here.
Yeah, I was just saying, this might be the closest decision right here. Risky Boots, I know you put this in here just to mess with me. And I also really don't ever want to hear you say Dr. Eggman, even if it's a.k.a.
Sorry.
No, I'm just teasing. Now, Eggman's dressed great, but he also is kind of a schlub, right?
Kind of. I mean, here's the thing about Eggman. You can tell he cares about his fashion sense, but I feel like he never really picks appropriate clothing for his body type. Like, what is up with those super, super tight pants? You know, it really, you know, accentuates his belly and not really in the best way. I mean, I'm okay that, you know, he's proud of that, and that's cool, but I don't know. I kind of think he could do something better for himself.
Are we body shaming Dr. Robotnik here?
I would never do such a thing. Right. He's got a lovely mustache.
But then Risky Boots, I don't know enough. I feel like you would be the foremost expert on Risky Boots. What say you in this instance, Chris?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, she's got, you know, big puffy pantaloons. She's got an interesting skull motif there. You know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, she certainly has the pirate look down. I mean, possibly she needs to see more sun. She's a little bit pasty. I don't know. It's really tough.
Are we saying this is a draw and maybe it's a three-way tie for the next round?
Ooh. Well, I hadn't considered that, but if that's the way you want to go, sure, let's do it.
All right. Let's try it.
Okay, we have a draw between Robotnik and Risky Boots. They both move along to the next round.
Is that even fair? I guess, you know, Like, is this by the book? I don't know. I've never seen a draw in one of these, but you know what? I'm okay.
We're making this all up as we go along.
Right.
Okay, moving along to the Royal League. Our first matchup is Wart versus King K. Rool.
Oh, man.
And let's be honest, these are kind of the same character.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at this graphic you provided, and they really do look almost like the same character, just drawn from different vantage points.
They both got the crown. They've both got, you know, some sort of cape or robe thing. They're both green-skinned. I guess King K. Rool is a reptile and Wart is an amphibian. But, you know, they're very, very similar in a lot of ways.
They both look like they were whacked in the face with, like, an anvil right before this photo was taken.
If you say so. But anyway, they are so similar. But for me personally, you know, I feel like Wart is the original here and King K. Rool is just a copycat, so I'm going with Wart.
Wow. Wow. You know, I can't really argue that. You know, King K. Rool gets the advantage of always being in 3D, whereas Wart was clearly in 2D. You know, I think you do have a point there. I think I'm willing to go with Wart as well.
All right. Then on to the last first round matchup. Again, in the Royal League, we have King Dedede versus King Hippo. Who is more fashionable?
I mean, King Hippo is wearing practically nothing.
He literally has boxer shorts because he is a boxer.
Right. And then, you know, half of his wardrobe is a bandage over his belly button.
Yes. And sometimes a manhole cover over his belly, too.
That's true. That's true. With some duct tape. I've got to go with King Dedede in this case. He's just wearing the royal duds. That's kind of what you want to see. He's got an awesome mallet.
Mm-hmm.
He's always got that come at me, bro look on his face.
Yep. Yeah, I think I also have to go with Dedede as the clear-cut winner. I mean, you know, I was looking at the opening cinematics in the Wii version of Punch-Out for King Hippo, thinking, well, you know, maybe when we see him, you know, on his island, maybe he dresses up a little bit better than he does in the boxing ring. But no, he is just as much a slob when he's there hanging out on the island, being the king of whatever he's the king of. Man, it just feels like he really let himself go. So, yeah, absolutely giving this one to King Dedede as well.
Nice.
All right, then. So that is round one done. Let us move on to round two. And in round two, our criteria is intelligence. Which character is smarter? That's how we are comparing them for our round two matchups. So jumping into the Major Villains League, we now have Ganon or Ganondorf taking on Bowser. Which one do you think is more intelligent?
Oh, man. I've never really had to think about this before, but if I'm really going to be honest here, it feels like Ganon comes up with the better ideas. I feel like Bowser, you know, he's a little, you know, tried and true, kind of always steals the princess. Ganon does all sorts of weird things, like, you know, needs to be summoned from the nether realm and... But you know what I'm saying here? It feels like...
I do. I mean, he has a lot more elaborate plots going on.
Yeah,
know?
Like, I can't
plots
think of any.
About, you know, like he wanted to, you know, raise, you know, Hyrule from the depths in right. Wind Waker. But Bowser, you know, has this very one-track mind. It doesn't seem like he ever really gets very complicated in his schemes. So I think I'm agreeing with you. I think I'm going to have to give it to Ganondorf.
Yeah, he's far more treacherous.
Okay, so there you go. There you have it. The winner, I guess, of the Major Villains League would be Ganondorf, who will be going on to the next round.
Wow.
Meanwhile, over in the RPG League, who is smarter, Kefka or Fawful?
Man, this would actually be a really fun game if there was somehow a way Kefka could attack Fawful. Did I say Falafel? I meant Fawful.
You know, Fawful, he seems to be very clever. In some ways, he also seems to be kind of insane, but Kefka, you know, you could kind of say the same thing. I mean, he's like completely insane.
Yeah, they're very similar.
They are in a lot of ways. But, you know, Kefka, you know, he sort of had to ingratiate himself into the Empire. He was sort of, you know, an advisor for many years. So, you know, I kind of want to say it's probably Kefka. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Fawful clearly is in ownership of some crazy scientific devices. You know, he's flying around mm-hmm. on a floating platform.
Yeah.
But who knows if he invented that himself?
We don't know.
He also, all his schemes seem to backfire. So, you know, not that Kefka's all went according to plan, but Kefka in the end was a lot more evil.
Well, he was.
So I've got to...
But who was smarter? That's the question.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Chris? How do we decide this? I think ultimately in this one, evil is going to win out and Kefka is going to go on.
Okay, all right. Kefka, the more intelligent, apparently, and the winner of the RPG League. So, over to the third party league. Because we had a draw before, we now have the intelligence battle between Dracula, Dr. Robotnik, and Risky Boots.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't think there's been a more obvious battle, really, in the tournament so far. It is well known that Dr. Robotnik is a genius with an IQ of over 300.
Wow.
So I think he squashes the competition. I mean, you know, Risky Boots is very conniving. Dracula seems fairly intelligent too, but I think Robotnik wins this one hands down.
Yeah, clearly he's a doctor. I think he would be in trouble if Wily was still in from the first round, but he's not.
But he's not. He's not.
So yeah, I'm on board.
Okay. All right then. So... moving on to the Royal League, who is smarter then, Wart or King Dedede?
Oh, man. I don't know if either one of these can find their way out of a paper bag.
You know, I think it's a tough one, but I'm going to go with King Dedede just because he seems to do more than just try to, like, steal vegetables. He steals, like, a much wider variety of foods. Plus, he's not just a figment of someone's imagination. So, in that regard, I think it probably also makes him smarter than Wart, who is imaginary. So,
yeah, I mean, King Dedede's been in a cartoon. Wart's been in nothing. I think King Dedede can talk. I mean, is that right? Wart, do we even know? I don't think so, right?
I'm not really sure. Not really sure.
So, yep, I think King Dedede by default, really.
Okay, King Dedede takes the Royal League. All right, then. That's two rounds down. We are now into our third round. And how are we going to decide the victor here? Well, we are going with strength. As in, if these two characters fight, who is going to win?
Mm-hmm.
And starting out, we have Ganondorf, or Ganon, in the Major Villains League versus Kefka from the RPG League. And wow, I really don't even know who would win. I mean, both of these guys are super, super powerful. Kefka, you know, went through so many forms at the end of the game. Ganondorf has gone through, you know, so many forms over the course of various Zelda adventures. And, you know, both of these guys have immense amounts of power.
Yeah, I feel like if these two were to fight, they would just continually evolve into different forms.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So who wins out, I wonder? Okay, here's a different perspective. Hasn't Ganon pretty much shown up in different time periods?
Yes, that's the one thing. Yeah, Ganon has been reborn again and again and again. He really can't be stopped, it would seem.
Right, whereas Kefka, you know, kind of only existed in one time and one place as far as we know.
Yeah, and he was defeated by, you know, a group of humans and never came back, I don't think.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way. But then again, you know, Kefka had to be defeated by, like, you know, four people all at once, and Ganon just gets defeated by one kid with a sword. So.
But aren't there, like, some parallel timelines in the Zelda universe where Ganon wins and stuff like that?
Oh, I guess there was. I guess there was. I mean, certainly he has emerged victorious in the past.
Mm.
But, you know, in Final Fantasy VI, Kefka succeeds in destroying the world. So he's had, you know, a pretty significant victory, too. I don't know if this is getting us anywhere.
Mm.
Do you have a pick? Who are you going with?
I feel like in this case, and I hate to be, you know, biased, but it's like Ganon's the incumbent. Is that fair to say? Is that weird?
I don't know if it's fair to say, but, you know, I think if it came down to it, I kind of feel like he would be the one that emerged victorious in a knockdown drag-out fight.
Yeah, look at that beard.
Yeah, yeah. So I will back you up and say yes. I think that, you know, Ganon with, you know, I mean, they both have tons of physical abilities and spells at their disposal, but I think that Ganon would be able to pull it off.
And I actually think Ganon's been in more forms, of course, than Kefka, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, he gets knocked down, but he'll get back up again after like 1,000 years or something.
He's Chumbawamba that way.
Yes. I'm comfortable giving this one to Ganondorf.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it's tough, but I'm okay giving it to Ganondorf.
All right.
Okay, and meanwhile, on the other side, we have Dr. Robotnik duking it out with King Dedede.
Well, Robotnik always has the inventions, right? He always has the different vehicles that he drives. What does King Dedede have?
Well, apparently he can, you know, like totally get pumped up and buff. At least he does in Kirby Star Allies.
Mm-hmm. He also has a giant mallet.
He has a big hammer.
He's been in Smash Brothers, so he knows how to fight.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. A lot of times when King Dedede is a boss in the Kirby games, you know, sometimes he is kind of a pushover. So I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Dr. Robotnik here.
That's true. And doesn't Robotnik enslave animals? And isn't King Dedede just like a glorified penguin?
That is a very, very good point. I think that is the clincher. I think we're going to have to give this round to Dr. Robotnik.
Man, who would have thought?
Yeah. And here we are, you know, coming back to the classic Nintendo versus Sega matchup here for our finals.
Oh, man. This is going to be a good one.
So, for this final round, the ultimate villain, Ganondorf or Dr. Robotnik, the category is charisma. Who is the most charismatic of these two characters?
Like, when you said that, I immediately thought of them both on a date. Not with each other, but with a female.
Hmm. Hmm.
And I'm trying to imagine, you know, Ganondorf courting a female. I'm seeing it. I can, you know, he's very smooth. He's very suave. He grew up with a lot of women in Gerudo Valley.
Sometimes he turns into a pig.
Right. Well, no. But but then Robotnik, like, I'm not so sure, right? Like, can you imagine that guy on a date?
I could. It would probably be pretty awkward. And yeah, as we mentioned, he is very smart. I'm sure he could put that to his advantage. But charisma? I'm not sure it's charisma.
Yeah, he would probably just put, like, a helmet on the lady's head and just, like, convince her to like him.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Yeah, that's kind of what his thing is you know, he will not take no for an answer. He's going to do it by force. You know, he doesn't really get people to follow him through his stellar personality. You know, a lot of times I'm not sure that Ganondorf does either, but, you know, I go back to, like, Wind Waker Ganondorf, and I think about, you know, him giving that speech about the wind and how he covets the wind and stuff, and that was a really great speech. And I could feel a lot of charisma coming out of him at that point, for sure.
That's true. And in Ocarina of Time, you know, you see that he has an audience with the king. And, you know, clearly people talk to him and he's charismatic enough that he causes a lot of problems.
I'm not sure that really makes sense, but I'll buy it.
All right.
So, yeah, here we are. We are ending up with Ganondorf as the winner of our Tournament of Villains.
Man, who would
I mean,
thought?
I guess, in a way, he's kind of the most obvious one, since he is, you know, such a major, important villain in Nintendo history. But, you know, I mean, with these, you know, different categories, I did not think anybody was a particular shoo-in to win. So, yeah, got to give it up. Congratulations to Ganondorf. Good fashion sense, strong, smart, and charismatic. If I want anybody to conquer my world, it would be Ganondorf.
A role model to gingers everywhere.
Indeed. All right. So we have taken care of this week's big topic. I hope it was fun and amusing for everybody. So with that said, I guess it is time to wrap up this week's episode of Power Pros.
But first...
However, yes, before we go, we do have time, of course, for one more thing. And that would be a dramatic reading. This time, it is from the eShop description of the Nintendo Switch game World Neverland Daily Life in the Elnia Kingdom. Let's live in this kingdom. Enjoy a free life with love and adventure. The kingdom simulation game where you immigrate to an imaginary kingdom and enjoy your free life. This is the latest game of the World Neverland, nickname is Warneva, series. This is the imaginary kingdom that lives in the computer. You can walk wherever you wish to go. Beautiful woods, river, farms, stock farms, mines, schools, churches, and castles. And It stimulates the lives of the people who live there finally. The users who go there and see the real communication with the habitats would feel like they are playing a MMORPG. They would have a boyfriend or a girlfriend and get married, have children, and their children will carry that over. The life in this kingdom is a one-time story that is different every time you play it. This is so much more than the normal game experience, and will stay in your heart as a cherished memory forever.
You're making this up. This isn't real. No one wrote this, besides you.
That's what it says.
All right. Wow, that's a whopper.
Does it make you want to go out and play this game? Do you want to play World Neverland, Daily Life in the Elnia Kingdom now?
I mean, kind of. I guess more than it did.
Has stock farms.
How did you find this description?
It's just there in the eShop.
I mean, but like you just read it and you were like,
Yep, that's all there is to it.
Right.
I mean, I guess I saw the game. I said, I have no idea what this is. Let's find out. And boy, did I find out.
Yeah, some of those eShop descriptions are great.
Yes. Yes, they are.
True classics.
Modern classics, for sure. All right, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com for any reason, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Fashad.
My beard itches.
And our good friend, the Inkling Girl. We will see you next time.